Syria is calling for some serious action by the UN Security Council to put an end to Israel's illegal practices in the occupied Golan Heights. Iranian Air Force holds major nationwide drills, and that a week after holding a massive air defense exercise. The Polish Prime Minister says his country will not bow to the EU's blackmail over his country's decision to reject parts of the bloc's laws. This is World News from Tehran. I'm Behrouz Najafi. It's good to have you with us. The top story this hour, Syria believes pressure is needed to make Israel stop its violations and illegal constructions in the occupied Golan Heights. The country wants to see some action by the UN Security Council. Syria's UN envoy says that Israeli efforts to change demographics of the Golan Heights or impose its custody there will fail. Bassam Sabak noted that such measures have no legal effect under the relevant UN resolutions. He says that sooner or later, the occupied territory will return to Syria. Sabak also condemned Israel for the assassination of a former Syrian lawmaker last week. The Golan Heights belong to Syria, and all Israeli settlements there are illegal. Israeli officials, however, say that they are planning to eventually increase the settler population there fourfold. Our correspondent in Damascus, Mohammed Ali, tells us more about the Israeli violations in the Golan Heights and the specific concerns that Syria is asking the UN to help resolve.
He also strongly condemned the recent statements by the Israeli Prime Minister on increasing the number of settlement units building 7,000 settlement units over there in the occupied Syrian Golan with the aim of increasing the number of Israeli settlers from 40 to 100,000. He also renewed his call again on the United Nations Security Council to exert pressure on Israel to stop its violations and illegal actions, namely, and he said, that includes the Israeli crimes of killing, the arrests, looting of private property, and depriving the people of the Golan from their natural resources, and blocking those who left the occupied Syrian Golan for studying or for work or for any reason from returning back. He also said in his statement before the UN Security Council there in session on the Middle East, he said that it is unacceptable anymore. It is unacceptable to see the failure of the United Nations and the international community on forcing Israel and forcing Israel to implement the UN relevant resolutions and stop Israel from its violations of human rights and international law. And stopping Israel from doing so, according to Sabah, can never be achieved without removing what he described the umbrella of protection provided by the United States and its Western allies.
Yemen's Ansarla movement has hit out of the UN Security Council statement that calls for an end to the fight for the liberation of Mara province from Saudi-backed forces. An Ansarla spokesman accused the 15-member UN body of continuing its support for the Saudi-led coalition. Mohammed Abdesalam says the council is undermining its own resolutions on the Yemen conflict. He promised that the Yemeni army and allied Ansarla forces will continue their fight against aggressors. That after the Security Council adopted a statement calling for de-escalation in Yemen that has been devastated by a war launched by Saudi Arabia in 2015. The text also called for an end to the Yemeni army's battle for Marib, the last stronghold of Saudi-backed forces. The army has made significant gains there over the past months. The Iranian Air Force has launched major maneuvers across the country. The main feature of this military exercise is that all operations in different bases across the nation have been commanded online from the main headquarters here in the capital, Tehran.
The Islamic Republic of Iran's Air Force has launched massive maneuvers in different locations across the country, including Isfahan, Bushehr, Bandar Abbas, Dizful, and Tabriz. The main operational phase of the large-scale drills, codenamed Fadayan Harim Velayat 10, began on Thursday with the participation of manned aircraft and drones. In the first phase of the military drill, aerial targets were shot at different speed and heights. Targets were hit on the ground under different conditions with the use of homemade upgraded heavy and semi-heavy bombs. During this military drill, different types of laser and radar missiles, as well as types of rockets and bombs made by young Iranian specialists, have been used. This is the first time that all the air bases of the Army of the Islamic Republic of Iran are jointly taking part in the military maneuvers, all in their own cities, but being commanded and controlled from the main command center in Tehran.
We used to hold military exercises in one particular location, but this military drill is being conducted at different locations across the country, and they're being commanded and controlled from the command center in Tehran. All the developments can be seen online by commanders at the headquarters, and so far all the operations have been carried out successfully.
Tens of different types of fighter jets, bombers, cargo planes, reconnaissance planes, and drones have taken part in the military drill. Moreover, Camon 12 drone has successfully destroyed specific targets using smart bombs. At the same time, Karar drones, which have been equipped with 500-pound bombs and rockets, have been able to precisely hit the planned targets. Meanwhile, the manned aircraft of the Air Force of the Army, with the use of the most modern electronic war techniques, disrupted anti-air defense systems of the enemy, preparing the ground for drones to carry out their operations.
This is the first time that such military drill is being conducted all across the country. The main feature of this maneuver is a concentrated command for non-concentrated operations. All the missiles, rockets, and bombs which are being used in this military drill have been produced by Iranian specialists. We have used precision-guided Qased and Yasin bombs. Moreover, we have used our combat drones like Camon 12, which is able to strike its target from a distance of 10 to 15 kilometers.
This massive maneuver is aimed at using an integrated command and control network and supporting operational and intelligence systems in the integrated network of the Army of the Islamic Republic of Iran. In the drill, technology-based and digitalized equipment, weaponry, and systems have been used.
This military exercise shows that the Air Force of the Army is well prepared to protect the country's territorial integrity and has full control over the airspace of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Salman Kujuri, Tehran.
The fate of the 2015 nuclear deal between Iran and several world countries is hanging in the balance, with major issues still remaining unresolved after several rounds of negotiations. Given the speculation that a new round of talks might be on the cards for the revival of the deal in Vienna, Tehran is saying it's not backing down from its position and is sticking to its demands.
6 years have passed since Iran and several states, namely the US, China, Russia, Britain, France, and Germany, put their signatures to a deal under which Tehran agreed to limit some of its nuclear activities in exchange for sanctions relief. But in 2018, the situation reached a deadlock when former US President Donald Trump backed out of the deal. Not only that, but he also brought back the sanctions despite Iran's display of full compliance. Tehran waited for 1 year before finally cutting back on some of its commitments under the deal. Later on, with the administration of Joe Biden sweeping into power and the White House's declared willingness to return to the negotiating table, Tehran and the remaining signatories went back to the Austrian capital with an agenda to revive the landmark accord. Initially, some progress was made, but long-running issues remain unresolved to this day. In the meantime, the U.S. continues to keep the sanctions in place as a tool of pressure against Iran. Now, with the possibility of a renewed push for the revival of the deal, Tehran says it will not settle for anything less than results that would safeguard the rights of its people.
Iran is a country of dialogue and negotiation. But a negotiation that guarantees the rights of Iranian people and forces all parties to return to their commitments.
Iran has been sticking to one point, but Washington was the party to violate the deal and should therefore be the party to take the first step by returning to full compliance. Tehran says it will start resuming its commitment only after the complete removal of all U.S. sanctions in a verifiable manner. Action and not words. That's what Iran is demanding. It also says the European partners likewise need to put aside their empty promises and get back to action.
It was the inaction of the European states that emboldened Trump to withdraw from all agreements and violate JCPOA and Resolution 2231. That happened because the European capitals all acted as only passive observers. We are expecting that all sides come to Vienna with the full understanding that there is no shying away from their commitments, which should be fully implemented under the accord.
Iran is seeking reassurances from the European signatories that such violations would never happen again. It says any renegotiation of the terms of the deal is out of question. The administration of President Ebrahim Raisi is reviewing the details of the previous six rounds of discussions held in Vienna. Now, with speculations on the possible resumption of talks in the coming days and Tehran's firm stance, one can only speculate about how the other parties will fare up.
A hospital in Tehran is offering medical treatment to some of the victims of a deadly terrorist attack that happened in neighboring Afghanistan. Just days ago, Iran's deputy ambassador visited the injured at that facility. The official says that following their defeat in Afghanistan, the U.S. and its allies are trying to use Daesh to cause instability. He says the recent increase in bomb attacks serves exactly that purpose. The official believes that regional countries need to redouble their efforts to prevent similar acts of terrorism in the future. At least 60 people were killed and dozens more got injured in three back-to-back explosions that tore through a mosque in Kandahar during Friday prayers. Daesh claimed responsibility. Tens of thousands of Sudanese have held rallies in several cities, including the capital Khartoum, in support of the democratic transition to a civilian-led government. Supporters of the transitional government took to the streets following a call by an alliance of pro-democracy groups. In Khartoum, police reportedly fired tear gas outside parliament to disperse the ralliers. The African nation is in turmoil amid a standoff between the government of Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok and the military. Rival demonstrators have been camping outside the presidential palace since Saturday. The pro-military groups demand the dissolution of the government, arguing it has failed them politically and economically. Sudan has been ruled by an interim civilian military government since the ouster of President Omar al-Bashir in 2019. Now crossing over to Europe, tensions between the European Union and Poland continue to escalate. The Polish Prime Minister says that he will not bow to what he calls blackmail of the 27-member bloc. Ahead of an EU leaders' summit in Brussels, Mateusz Morawiecki said that his country will not accept the bloc make decisions on areas of national competences of its member states. Morawiecki added that he would seek solutions to Warsaw's ongoing feuds with the Union. Tensions heightened earlier this month after Poland's top court rejected the supremacy of some of the EU laws, arguing that they're incompatible with the Constitution. That raised fears that it could be a first step toward Poland leaving the bloc. However, the Polish government has denied any plan for such a thing. Our Brussels correspondent Jerome Hughes says that the European Union legislators are pressuring the EU Commission to withhold funding for Poland over the rule of law feud.
Well, EU legislators in Belarus are putting the European Commission, the executive arm of the EU, under pressure to try and basically withhold funding for Poland. We're talking about billions of euro from the EU budget and also the 750 billion euro recovery fund, the COVID-19 recovery fund. Now, EU leaders are meeting at the moment beside me here in Brussels in the European Council building, and it's a two-day summit today and tomorrow, Friday. But this issue is overshadowing all the other important issues. But it has to be said that Poland does have support within the European Council. So you have 27 member states. Poland is one of them. But other countries would have sympathy for Poland's position. So, you know, this might be interesting for constitutional lawyers to discuss, you know, does EU law have primacy over a country's constitution and so on. But I think the bigger picture here relates to the divisions within the European Union. And these are fundamental divisions relating to key structures and key laws within the European Union itself. So it's a little bit unlike some of the disputes that we've seen in the past. This is about the EU itself, and that's why it's so important, and that's why it's so interesting to see how it pans out. Of course, the situation with Poland is a big issue, and it's taking a lot of the focus. But really, it's actually just one example of all of these major divisions, and that's the big problem for the European Union.
NATO's preparing an anti-Russia strategy, Secretary General of the Western Military Alliance, as its members are about to agree on an overarching plan for the defense of the Euro-Atlantic area.
We are in the midst of a transformation of NATO. Over the last years, we have stepped up and refocused on our collective defense to protect our own territory. And therefore, NATO ministers, NATO defense ministers, will today agree a new set of capability targets for all allies.
Stoltenberg noted that the plan ensures that the alliance has the right forces in the right place and at the right time. He underlined that relationship between NATO and Russia is at its lowest point. Meantime, defense ministers from some NATO members have been quoted as saying that the new master plan is aimed at defending against any potential Russian attack. The confidential strategy is reportedly for simultaneous attacks using nuclear weapons, hacking computer networks, and assaults from space. And the remarks reaffirm the alliance's core goal of deterring Russia. Moscow has, however, denied any aggressive intention. It says it's NATO that risks destabilizing Europe. COVID-19 keeps surging in Russia, with daily infections and deaths there reaching new highs since the beginning of the pandemic. 1,036 deaths in one day, that's Russia's overall tally. It takes the tally to more than 227,000, the highest in Europe. Health authorities have also reported over 36,000 new infections, raising the tally to 8.1 million. Officials blame a slow vaccination campaign for the steep rise in infections and deaths. The surge has prompted the authorities to introduce new curbs in the capital of Moscow. The new measures include a four-month stay-at-home order for unvaccinated Russians over 60 years old, as well as mass event prohibition from October 28th to November the 7th. New Zealand is one of the few places in the world known for its success in keeping the COVID-19 at bay, but COVID infections there are shooting up, with the daily caseload now a three-digit number. Authorities are reporting 102 new cases, most of them in Auckland, and that brings the overall infections since the start to well over 2,200. There have been 28 deaths in total. New Zealand stayed largely virus-free for most of the pandemic until the Delta variant started spreading in August. The tight restrictions and 1.7 million Aucklanders have been extended this week. Officials saying that infections are likely to rise until vaccination speeds up, urging the people to get their shots quickly. Some 70% of New Zealanders are fully inoculated. Close to 90% have received at least one dose. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Join us in this journey, IRIB English Radio.
Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
health tourism. In the name of God, Salam and welcome to the 13th episode of our series, Health Tourism. In this episode, we are going to introduce you to Bahman Hospital, one of the leading hospitals in the Iranian capital, Tehran. Stay with us, please. Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran, has been carrying this title for more than 200 years. Agha Muhammad Khan Qajar, the founder of the Qajar dynasty, made Tehran the capital of Iran in 1786. Tehran is not only the seat of government and administration of the country, but it is also the commercial, business and manufacturing heart of the Islamic Republic. Over years, it has become an advanced, modern, and beautiful metropolis where, in addition to historical and old places, many modern and contemporary tourist attractions abound. Tourists, both domestic but foreign, visit Tehran in large numbers. One of these attractions is the Nature Bridge. Nature Bridge is a three-story structure that is 300 meters long and is built at the height of 40 meters. This bridge, which is only used by pedestrians, is located in Tehran's Abbasabad district and towers over the Modarres Highway. The Nature Bridge connects two famous parks of the city, that is, Taleghani Park and Water and Fire Park. The special lighting and unique features of this bridge attract many visitors and tourists. There are also a number of cafes and restaurants on the bridge that tourists can visit to relax and eat. Nature Bridge is the first pedestrianized or non-vehicle bridge in the country and the largest non-vehicle bridge in West Asia region. Tehran, as the beating heart of the country, has attracted the attention of many foreign tourists. And as far as attracting health tourists is concerned, it is ranked number one among Iranian cities. In fact, Tehran is definitely the first choice for health tourists visiting the country. It is worth mentioning that, according to Travel Risk Map 2019, Iran is on par with countries such as the UK, Canada, Sweden, and Denmark in terms of international security. The Travel Risk Map has been prepared by the SOS International Institute for Global Risk, which measures the level of risk in each country and region around the world based on the existing threats to travelers in terms of violence and political insecurity. Threats such as terrorism, war, social unrest, and crime. In defining this travel risk map, factors such as the stability of transportation infrastructure, the level of industrial relations, the effectiveness of security and emergency services, and the country's sensitivity to natural disasters have all been taken into consideration. Therefore, traveling to Iran is safe. The hospitality of the Iranian people, coupled with the natural beauty of the country, often turn it into a memorable experience for tourists who visit Persia. Eco-tourists and health tourists make up a sizable percentage of travelers who visit this country. In the remainder of this program, we will introduce you to one of the most prestigious and prominent hospitals in Tehran, Bahman Hospital, and we will become more familiar with its history, facilities, and equipment, and the wide range of medical services that it offers to foreign patients. Bahman Hospital is located in West Tehran in Iran Zamin Street. The construction of this hospital was completed in 2006 and it became operational a year later. Bahman Hospital is one of the most beautiful hospitals in Tehran in terms of interior architecture and building construction, which has been built on an 18,000 square meter plot of land. This 200-bed hospital has four floors consisting of different medical wards and an administrative ground floor and two basement floors. Bahman Hospital is a private and general hospital, and in this short period of 14 years, it has successfully established itself as one of the most modern, trusted, and state-of-the-art treatment centers in this northwestern region of Tehran. Certainly, the hospital has been able to receive a certificate of accreditation from Iran's Ministry of Health. Bahman Hospital is also very active in the field of women and children's health and has received the title of the top hospital in promoting natural childbirth and is also known as a child-friendly hospital. The medical facilities of Bahman Hospital include a clinic, paraclinic, inpatient ward, intensive care unit, ultra-modern specialty surgery room, pharmacy, etc. Each of these departments provide a range of services to patients with the best facilities and equipment. For example, the hospital's cardiac intensive care unit has two CCU wards and two post-CCU wards, with a total of 25 active beds, ready to serve patients with heart problems or those who have been transferred to the hospital in emergency. Patients who have had angiography or angioplasty are also referred to this ward. This ward is equipped with a special monitoring system, each of which is connected to a central monitor, and patients admitted to the CCU are constantly observed through a monitor. The surgical ward of the hospital includes a general surgery room and a heart surgery room. The general surgery room of the hospital has 8 active operating rooms with advanced and up-to-date equipment, and the largest and most complex surgeries in the field of general surgery, gynecology, orthopedics, ear, nose, and throat, neurology, laparoscopy, and plastic surgery are all performed there. Bahman Hospital cardiac operating room in an area of about 400 square meters has 4 active operating rooms, and the best equipment has provided the possibility of performing various types of cardiovascular surgery by top surgeons and specialists in the field. Bahman Hospital also operates internationally and has received its IPD or International Patient Department license from the Ministry of Iran's Health Ministry and provides the best medical services to these patients. Patients from many Asian and European countries come to this hospital for treatment. The International Patient Reception Ward is located on the ground floor of the hospital, and patients can go to this ward after entering the hospital and take the necessary measures to admit their patients. Dear listeners, that was the 13th episode of our series, Health Tourism. Until our next program, goodbye and God bless.
Methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now we invite you to listen to a speech by Sheikh Hamza Sodagian.
We congratulate the brothers and sisters on the occasion of the birth of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi, although the date is the 17th of Rabi'ul Awwal, but it's definitely something that we can congratulate brothers and sisters before the day of, and many days before, many times, and inshallah we'll have celebrations this week and inshallah the following week. And I hope that we are able to take advantage of occasions that we celebrate religious dates and events in a not the same way, but in a similar way, in that we consider them sha'airullah, the same way that Muharram is sha'airullah, part of sha'airullah. We need to realize that these celebrations are also sha'airullah if we perform them in a way that is pleasing to Allah, pleasing to the Holy Prophet, and pleasing to his progeny, the Ahlul Bayt salamullah alayhim ajma'in. One of the things that in the context of the birth of the Prophet, we need to remind ourselves, each other, genuinely as brothers and sisters in Islam, is that we have got to use all the common elements of faith and practice that we can find between us as Muslimin, as wide a scope as we can find, to come together and share those elements of faith and share ourselves and our proximity to those elements, to those principles, to those pillars. Coming together as Muslimin based on these elements of faith that we share is necessary, especially when we're talking about the Prophet of Islam sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam. Why do I say especially when we are celebrating our beloved Prophet? It's because the Prophet of Islam, one of the things that he preached to us during his lifetime, many occasions, but also towards the end of his life, in Hajjatul Wida', he made it a point to mention. We're talking about the Prophet of Allah, the Messenger of God. وَمَا يَنْطِقُ عَنِ الْهَوَىٰ إِنْ هُوَ إِلَّا وَحْيٌ يُوحَىٰ. He doesn't say things out of negligence. He doesn't miss things out of negligence. He doesn't speak without knowledge. He knows things that we don't know at the time. For instance, when we say that he preached this idea, the wording is this. In Hajjatul Wida, the Holy Prophet said, the believers, this is Hajjatul Wida. Now, this is a celebration right now we're having, but we're talking about a preaching that's close to and a reminder of the demise of the Prophet. He said that after me, you need to continue this. The principles are the following. Whoever says, Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah, wa ashhadu anna Muhammadan Rasulullah, they are Muslimin, and their blood is respected, their dignity is respected, and you are brothers, and all of you who share those two elements of faith are yedun, one hand, ala man siwahu, against those who are against them. One power, one might, one body. This is what the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Anytime we mention and discuss the Prophet, one of the necessary and important messages that we need to remind ourselves and review is this. When the Prophet said, anyone who says and believes in these two elements of faith is Muslim, and they are protected, and they are brothers, and you should be, he says this, he doesn't limit it at that. He says, وَهُمْ يَدٌ عَلَى مَنْ سِوَهُمْ. One power when there are others that are against them, when there's مَنْ سِوَهُمْ, there's others, in comparison to others. There's an element of مَنْ سِوَهُمْ, there are others. The Prophet in that context, looking at the whole picture, everyone involved, the Prophet emphasizes you need to be one ala man siwahum. Those man siwahum, the enemies within man siwahum, others, are actually having a lot of problem with this wahum yadun. All of them forming one yad. I'll have a few words about that, that I will say inshallah what that means. They're one hand. But before that, I was trying to explain this idea. When the Prophet said this, no one can say, well, this is the Prophet, he's speaking in the context where there isn't a division yet. This is a time where there weren't those who took away the right of governance and khilafah of Ali ibn Abi Talib, of Amir al-Mu'mineen. This cannot be said for two reasons. One is, for the reason that I already mentioned, the Holy Prophet, وَمَا يَنْطِقُ عَنِ الْهَوَى, don't treat his words as our words. If he's speaking for after himself, he knows of exactly what will happen all the way until the end of time. In that context, whoever says, أَشْهَدُ أَنْ لَا إِلَهَ إِلَّا اللَّهُ وَأَشْهَدُ أَنَّ مُحَمَّدَ رَسُولُ اللَّهِ, they are Muslimin, وَهُمْ يَدُونَ. That's number one, that we already know that. Besides that, something we've mentioned before as well, If anybody thinks, even based on material evidence, there wasn't evidence of there being a plot for this to happen, they're wrong. It was evident that people were working towards this. So the Prophet not only knew from the knowledge of the unseen and divine knowledge that God provided to him, and everything that he said is divinely guided, and is a guidance until the day of judgment, not for that day only. It's all the way until the day of judgment, whatever the conditions may be, unless he said that in other conditions, act differently, behave differently. If he didn't set any boundary, if he didn't put any qualifier, if he didn't condition a ruling to something, it's absolute, it's without condition, that means it's without condition. He didn't set any conditions. Now, what does it mean when he says وَهُمْ يَدٌ عَلَى مَنْ سِوَهُ? Yad is a parable in Arabic, a figure of speech that refers to power. When you do things, you do them with your hands. Okay? Your hands are the symbol of power. When it says in the Holy Quran, the Jews, quoting them, now their language is Hebrew, it's not Arabic, but the Quran quotes them, so it's putting it in Arabic language. قالت اليهود يد الله مغلولة. God's hands are tied. What does that mean? He doesn't have ability. He doesn't have power. Not that God, عياذ بالله, although in some instances the Jews and others went as far as saying God, عياذ بالله, God forbid, had a physical material body of some sort. That's completely wrong. That's not what the Quran is even attributing to them in that particular context, at least. What they're saying is that God, after creation, He created a system that even He cannot interfere in. That's what they were saying. And then Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says their hands are tied. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala's hands are completely open and is not restricted by anything that He has created or anything whatsoever. Yad means that power, ability. When the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi said that Muslimin need to be one hand, that means all the abilities of Muslimin, all the power, in whatever area, in sciences, in economics, in politics, in military, whatever it is, all these abilities and powers need to be joined together. It needs to form one, not even cooperation in a sense that we have different entities and we're completely separate and we'll just, you know, have a little something to do with one another. No, it needs to form one hand, one power, one unit functioning. This is what our beloved Prophet has said to us.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
روحي كريم عظيم عليم حليم حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صل عليه.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
In the limelight. The U.S. Supreme Court on Monday, 18th of October, signaled that it is not retreating from its inclination to grant a legal protection called qualified immunity to police officers accused in lawsuits of using excessive force, ruling in favor of officers on Monday in separate cases from California and Oklahoma. The article you're about to hear has been written by journalists Andrew Chung and Lawrence Hurley. It has been taken from the Reuters news agency. The piece is titled U.S. Supreme Court Again Protects Police Accused of Excessive Force. The U.S. Supreme Court on Monday, 18th of October, signaled that it is not retreating from its inclination to grant a legal protection called qualified immunity to police officers accused in lawsuits of using excessive force, ruling in favor of officers on Monday in separate cases from California and Oklahoma. The justices overturned a lower court decision allowing a trial in a lawsuit against police officers Josh Gerdner and Brandon Vick over the 2016 fatal shooting of a hammer-wielding man in Tahlequah, Oklahoma. They also overturned a lower court decision to deny a request by police officer Daniel Rivas Villegas for qualified immunity in a lawsuit accusing him of using excessive force in 2016 while handcuffing a suspect in Union City, California. The brief rulings were unsigned, with no public dissents among the justices in the cases, both decided without oral arguments. The qualified immunity defense protects police officers and other government officials from civil litigation in certain circumstances, permitting lawsuits only when an individual's clearly established statutory or constitutional rights have been violated. The rulings indicated that the Supreme Court justices think lower courts still are denying qualified immunity too frequently in police excessive force cases, having previously chided appeal courts on that issue in recent years. These are not the actions of a court that is likely to end or seriously reform qualified immunity, Chris Kemet, a lawyer with the NAACP Legal Defense and Educational Fund Civil Rights Group, wrote on Twitter. A 2020 Reuters investigation revealed how qualified immunity, with the Supreme Court's continual refinements, has made it easier for police officers to kill or injure civilians with impunity. In the Oklahoma case, police officers responded to a complaint by the former wife of the slain man, Dominic Rollis, that he was inebriated and in her garage. Officers told Dominic Rollis they were not there to arrest him, but rather to give him a ride out of there, according to court papers, but he refused to go with them. A lower court found that the police officers then advanced on Rollis, prompting him to back up and grab a hammer that he held above his head and refused to drop. When Rollis appeared to raise the hammer further, police officers Gerdner and Vick fired multiple times, killing him. A third officer had decided that the situation called for him to go less lethal by putting his firearm in his holster and using his stun gun instead. Dominic Rollis' estate sued police officers Gerdner and Vick, accusing them of using excessive force in violation of the U.S. Constitution's Fourth Amendment prohibition on unreasonable searches and seizures. The police said they used force because they feared Rollis would charge at them or throw the hammer. The Denver-based 10th U.S. District Court of Appeals in 2020 denied the police officers qualified immunity, finding that they may have unjustifiably escalated the situation. The Supreme Court on Monday, 18th of October, declined to decide whether recklessly creating a situation that requires deadly force can itself violate the Fourth Amendment, instead saying that no prior case had clearly established that the police officer's actions were illegal. In the California case, the justices ruled in favor of Rivas Villegas for the same reason. That case involved the arrest of a man named Ramon Cortes Luna at his home. Police officer Rivas Villegas used his foot to push Cortes Luna down and then pressed his knee into the man's back whilst another police officer handcuffed him. The San Francisco-based 9th U.S. District Court of Appeals last year ruled that Cortes Luna's excessive force claim could go to trial, noting that the suspect had been prone and not resisting. Congressional Democrats have sought to rein in qualified immunity as part of legislation to reform police practices. The House of Representatives passed a Democratic-based bill that would eliminate qualified immunity for law enforcement. But the U.S. Senate talks between Democrats and Republicans on police reform collapsed last month.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
November 25th, 2018. In a meeting with government officials of the Islamic Republic of Iran, ambassadors of Islamic countries and participants of the 32 Conference on Islamic Unity. Practicing Islamic unity will allow Muslims to overcome all the schemes of the enemies of Islam. You should strengthen the Islamic movement as much as you can. The way to the salvation of this region is strengthening Islamic awakening in the movement of Islamic resistance. This responsibility falls on all of the masses of the Muslims, in particular the ulama of Islam, intellectuals, writers, poets, scholars, artists, and political personalities. They are responsible for this. They are the addressee of the invitation of the Holy Prophet and of Islamic guidance. Today, the ground is prepared in the world of Islam. The ground is prepared in West Asia, in particular, for Islamic awakening. Everyone should help so that this awakening will yield results. Our advice to the rulers of Islamic countries is to return to the wilaya of Islam. They should place themselves under the wilaya of Allah. The wilaya of the US and Taghut will not work for them.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Today, some Muslim countries in our region unfortunately stand under the flag and wilaya of Taghut instead of the wilaya of Allah. Instead of following Islam and the light of the Quran, they follow the US, and the US is humiliating them on the basis of its arrogant nature. You have heard, as everyone has, that the prattling US president has likened the Saudi rulers to a dairy cow. This is humiliation. This is an insult. It is an insult to the people of the region and the people of that country. If the Saudis do not have a problem with being insulted, then to hell with it. They can enjoy being insulted. However, this is an insult to the people of the region and Muslim nations. Why should Islamic rulers follow the US in two criminal actions which have unfortunately damaged our region? One is the criminal action against the Palestinians and the important issue of Palestine, and another is the criminal action against Yemen. They should be sure that the victory belongs to the people of Palestine and the people of Yemen, and that the US and its cohorts will be defeated on this matter.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.